got a sprain or an itch, pain that's swelling or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Carmen and I have talked about multiple sclerosis on past shows. In fact, over the last 35 years of shows, we've probably spoken about MS quite a number of times. In 1946, Sylvia Lowry started the MS movement with the founding of the National MS Society. At that time, research was literally non-existent and no therapies worked.
Multiple sclerosis is currently still an incurable condition. It affects the central nervous system with symptoms that can include muscle stiffness, uncontrolled movements, and problems with balance.
Most nerves in the human body are covered by a protective sheath that's called a myelin sheath. Think of bare wire versus plastic-covered wire. In MS, the immune system attacks this specific protective myelin sheath. You might be asking yourself, so what? What is the advantage of this sheath? Is it just for protection?
The answer is no. The myelin sheath actually has a number of functions in the nervous system. The main function include protecting the nerves from other electrical impulses. And here is the crucial one. The myelin sheath helps speed the flow of current through the nerve fiber.
It seems that the unmyelinated nerves must send a wave down the entire length of the nerve. In large organisms, this presents a problem, as the signal takes a long time to reach the end of the nerve. Imagine if you accidentally placed your hand on a very hot object. The body would generally speed the signal to and from the brain, allowing you to move your hand out of harm's way quite quickly.
But if that same nerve fiber was unmyelinated, then it could conceivably take a much longer time for the signal to travel, and therefore your hand would remain in contact with the hot surface for a much longer time, causing you a worse burn.
Without having to actually get into the mechanics of it, rather than having to travel the entire length of the nerve to get from one end of a nerve to another, myelin allows the impulse to leap from one area of the nerve to the next. Not only does this speed up transmission, but it also actually saves energy, as the movement of both sodium and potassium through the cells of the nerves are not needed under the myelin sheath. By the way, this myelin sheath is seen only in vertebrates.
There are nerves throughout your entire body, including those that control the diameter of your blood vessels, to those nerves in your brain that are responsible for reasoning and thinking.
Multiple sclerosis signs and symptoms may differ greatly from one person to the next and over the course of the disease, depending on the location of the affected nerve fibers. We have already mentioned some of the symptoms.
You may also suffer from electric shock sensations that occur with certain neck movements, especially bending the neck forward. Other symptoms include tremors, lack of coordination, or an unsteady gait.
There can also be vision problems, some more serious than others. For example, partial or complete loss of vision, usually in one eye at a time, and often with pain during eye movement. Other vision symptoms include prolonged double vision and even blurry vision. And there are other symptoms, and those include slurred speech, fatigue, dizziness, and problems with sexual, bowel, and bladder functions.
Most people with MS have a relapsing remitting disease course. That means that they experience periods of no symptoms or relapses that develop over days or weeks and usually improve partially or completely.
Then there may be relapses that are followed by quiet periods of disease remissions that can last months or even years. You might see small increases in body temperature, which can temporarily worsen the signs and symptoms of MS.
About two-thirds of people with relapsing remitting, MS eventually develop a steady progression of symptoms with or without periods of remission.
The worsening of symptoms usually includes problems with mobility and gait. Some people with MS experience a gradual onset and steady progression of signs and symptoms without any relapses.
Estimates from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke suggest that around 250,000 to 350,000 individuals in the United States alone have a diagnosis of this condition.
I actually think that it is more prevalent. One reason is that it is still quite difficult to diagnose and to actually pinpoint the extent to which it has affected the nervous system. But, and this is why we have brought it up today on this show, soon this situation could change. Thanks to a new diagnostic drug developed by researchers from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. A new drug has been created that can bind to myelin. Remember the myelin sheath we were talking about? That's the coating that protects the nerves, helping them function correctly. And the drug is called Myeloviz. As we said, in MS, myelin becomes damaged, and as a result, the nerves also sustain some damage and stop working effectively, leading to the various symptoms of the condition.
The researchers believe that after administering Myeloviz, they will be able to use a PET scanner to track the drug's presence in the nerve and establish accurate images of the damage to the myelin and the nerves within.
The researchers have now announced that they have received approval from the Food and Drug Administration, you know, the FDA, to start clinical trials in humans and test the effectiveness of Myeloviz as a tool for diagnosing MS. Remember, this is not a drug to cure or even treat MS. It's only used to diagnose the disease.
They have already received funding in the form of a $1.7 million grant from the National Institute of Health to support these upcoming clinical trials.
Now, this is unique in that myelin has never been directly imaged before. And the researchers are, well, hopeful that this will provide earlier and more accurate diagnosis of MS. The drug will be administered intravenously, you know, IV. The PET scan will be performed afterwards. If the myelin has sustained any damage, the team believes that this will be reflected as dark spots on the scan because, in this case, Myeloviz will only have been able to bind unevenly to the remaining myelin. You might be thinking, well, why is this so important if we still can't treat MS?
Well, recognizing this damage will help doctors diagnose MS early on, since MS starts attacking the central nervous system even before it produces any visible symptoms.
Thus, Myeloviz could be the missing link in finding a cure for MS and other myelin diseases by serving as a specific and quantitative imaging marker for early diagnosis and quantitative evaluation of new and novel therapies. And using Myeloviz and the PET scans could replace MRI scans in diagnosing MS. Myeloviz could also provide improved ongoing monitoring of brain health in general.
It can also help doctors more accurately gauge the effectiveness of treatments in numerous neurological diseases, not just MS. These include epilepsy, stroke, neurodegeneration tumor, and trauma in the brain and spinal cord.
I remember a joke about diagnostic scans and their acronyms. A doctor ordered a new scan for a patient. The patient agreed, and the doctor brought in a hound dog. The canine slowly walked around the patient several times, then walked away to a panel on the wall. There, the hound used his paw to press several buttons. At that point, the physician said, "Aha! You have Jameson's disease." The patient was impressed. "What do you call this new diagnostic test?" he asked. The doctor said, "Well, you know, we have the PET scan and the CAT scan. Well, now we have the dog scan." Before we leave the subject of MS or multiple sclerosis, Cara and I are going to try and explain just what a PET scan is for those of you who are unfamiliar with that term.
The acronym PET stands for positron emission tomography. The scan uses a special dye containing radioactive tracers. These tracers are either swallowed, inhaled, or injected into a vein in the arm, depending on what part of the body.
The tracer will collect in areas of higher chemical activity, which is helpful because certain tissues of the body and certain diseases have a higher level of chemical activity. These areas of disease will show up as bright spots on the PET scan. And the PET scan can measure blood flow, oxygen use, and how your body uses sugar, as well as much, much more. In the United States, around 2 million PET scans are performed each year. The PET scans are more commonly used to detect cancer, heart problems, brain disorders, as well as central nervous system disorders. And that's why it's used presently in MS. And now, on to another subject, Parkinson's disease, a topic we have also visited many times previously.
Scientists have found that a technique for targeting a specific group of brain cells associated with Parkinson's disease is also effective at treating a separate group of brain cells.
This is a new two-pronged treatment approach to Parkinson's disease. The initial technique is a type of gene therapy that researchers first used to target cholinergic neurons or nerves, which are a type of nerve cell that are affected in Parkinson's disease. Now, by using brain imaging techniques, the scientists have discovered that their method also positively affected a group of cells near the cholinergic neurons called dopaminergic neurons.
Parkinson's disease is a type of neurological condition that typically affects people over the age of 60. Many of you listening will be there soon, while others have already gotten into that danger zone.
Symptoms include tremors, rigidity or stiffness in the trunks or limbs, as well as slowness of movement and impaired balance. These symptoms occur because the condition causes a reduction in a person's dopamine-producing brain cells.
In 2015, just 5 years ago, the researchers used a virus to deliver a genetic modification to the cholinergic neurons of rats, genetically modified to develop Parkinson's disease. The scientists then used a drug that could stimulate the targeted neurons.
Now, in the new study, the scientists showed how they used brain imaging technology to reveal a clear channel of communication between those cholinergic neurons, which they targeted in the 2015 study, and the nearby dopaminergic neurons.
By stimulating the rats' cholinergic neurons, they were also able to stimulate their dopaminergic neurons. These seem to restore the dopamine-producing function in the dopaminergic neurons.
As a result of this, the rats made a complete recovery, including movement restoration and a reversal of postural impairment. This all means that in the future, researchers may be able to develop a more effective and less invasive treatment for Parkinson's disease in humans.
Current Parkinson's treatments focus on managing the condition by using drugs, but these often have significant side effects, and they typically become ineffective after only 5 years.
Alternative treatments include deep brain stimulation, which is an invasive procedure that releases electronic pulses in a person's brain.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411.
1111, Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. So, onwards from multiple sclerosis to Parkinson's disease, and now Alzheimer's disease. A very small dose called a microdose of lithium could stop Alzheimer's from advancing. Some recent studies in rodents have suggested that lithium may help treat Alzheimer's disease.
The study shows that a microdose of lithium can halt the progression of this neurodegenerative condition, even in its later stages.
This suggests that lithium may help keep the brain healthy in Alzheimer's disease. You may be more familiar with the term lithium when you think of lithium batteries. Actually, lithium is an element that gets its name from the Greek word for stone, because lithium is present in trace amounts in virtually all rocks.
Lithium is approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as a prescription medication for use in bipolar disorder and other mental disorders such as depression and schizophrenia.
Something interesting was discovered in the year 2017. A study found that people exposed to drinking water with higher concentrations of lithium was 17% less likely to develop dementia than people whose water contained barely any lithium. Since then, other epidemiological, preclinical, and clinical studies have suggested that a microdose of lithium can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by influencing key pathological mechanisms at play in the neurodegenerative condition.
The study found that concentrations of lithium, hundreds of times lower than what doctors usually prescribe for psychiatric conditions such as bipolar disorder, can help improve early signs of Alzheimer's in rat models.
The doctors at McGill University in Quebec, Canada, including their chief researcher, Dr. Coelho, set out to examine whether or not microdoses of lithium would have the same beneficial effects at later stages of Alzheimer's disease. They named the lithium microdose formulation NP03.
The results were remarkably positive, stimulating in the researchers to continue working with this approach on a more advanced pathology.
They administered the same dose to rats afflicted with the equivalent of late preclinical stages of Alzheimer's disease in humans. The rats took the lithium for 12 weeks, just 3 months, and the researchers assessed their remote working memory using a special object recognition test. Dr. Coelho and colleagues also examined markers of neuroinflammation in the rodents' brains, levels of oxidative stress, as well as levels of something called beta amyloid. I'm asking, so you should also be, what were the results?
It was found that NP03 rescues functional deficits in object recognition tests and reduces the levels of soluble and insoluble cortical beta amyloid while reducing the number of plaques in the brain.
The results indicated that microdose lithium NP03 is effective at later stages of amyloid pathology. It appears that a treatment with microdose of encapsulated lithium is very likely to have tangible beneficial effects at early preclinical stages of Alzheimer's disease. In 2012, I was appointed by the Fourth Circuit Court of Florida as an examining committee member to determine the incapacity of certain individuals. Oftentimes, this meant determining if a person had dementia. Sometimes the person was initially diagnosed as having dementia, while other times we would see the mentioned diagnosis as Alzheimer's disease.
Many people are confused by these terms, so I thought that it will be a good idea to explain to you the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's.
Both diseases are similar, but certainly not the same. Dementia is a general term and has many different types, of which Alzheimer's is only one. As I said, dementia is really an umbrella term, and it's used to describe a set of symptoms that broadly affect cognitive functioning. These symptoms include faulty memory, thinking and focusing problems, as well as difficulty in problem solving, language, and visual perception.
Alzheimer's disease is a specific type of dementia that causes a gradual decline in memory and thinking. Some dementia symptoms can be mild and difficult to detect.
Remember that dementia is really a syndrome, meaning that it describes a collection of symptoms with no specific cause.
A syndrome is different from a disease, which has specific symptoms and a common cause. Dementia can affect a wide range of mental functions. As a result, many different diseases and conditions are types of dementia.
Alzheimer's disease is just the most common form of dementia, but there are several other types of, including vascular dementia, which results from strokes or other conditions that block blood flow to the brain. Lewy body dementia is the result of abnormal protein deposits in the brain. Remember the comedian and actor Robin Williams.
One of the main risk factors for dementia is age. In fact, up to 50% of people aged 85 and older may have a type of dementia.
About one-third of people over the age of 85 currently have Alzheimer's disease. And unfortunately, symptoms tend to get worse as age advances.
But it is still important to remember that dementia is not a normal part of aging, and it is possible to develop dementia at a younger age.
You might want to know some of the warning signs of dementia. These include anxiety and distress, low mood, a feeling of detachment and disinterest. You may note that patients start with repeating the same words, the same questions. Also, there may be signs of psychosis, sleep disturbances, walking around for no apparent reason, and let's just call it inappropriate behavior, such as social and sexual disinhibition. A big problem is that significant damage may already be present in a person before they even visit a doctor, which can make diagnosis and treatment way more difficult. Researchers believe that the cause of Alzheimer's disease is a buildup of abnormal protein formed plaques and tangles in the brain.
These abnormal proteins surround brain cells and can damage their ability to communicate. This eventually causes injury and death to the cells.
This buildup of protein is not everywhere in the brain, but occurs in specific areas of the brain, including an area called the hippocampus. That's an area of the brain that plays a crucial role in long-term memory recall. Other symptoms of Alzheimer's that we may not have mentioned include difficulty swallowing, speaking, and walking.
Right now, treatment for Alzheimer's disease aims to relieve symptoms and could involve medication for memory loss, medication for behavioral changes or depression, cognitive training, and sleep aids.
And do not think that positive lifestyle changes are not important. They are, as they may play an important role part of general health, and they may actually help prevent or slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia as well.
You may be concerned and thinking, what can I do now before it is too late? Well, you can start with good Mediterranean diet. You can also engage in regular physical activity.
The outlook for people with dementia depends on how early a specialist diagnoses and treats their condition. It is possible, depending on the type of dementia, to detect symptoms early enough for the individual to live for many more years and maintain as high a quality of life as possible.
Dementia in general and Alzheimer's disease in particular are progressive disorders with no available cures.
At least not yet. Treatment can help slow the degeneration down, but it just simply can't prevent it.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.